A drawing-room convention in Washington City's nascent society was to describe, to feminine titters and barks, one's first appalled sight of the National Swamp, accompanied by an ironical phrase recalling some refinement of Philadelphia life. However, when Meriwether Lewis thought back to his own initial view from the Georgetown Heights, felled and stripped trees, acres of mud, log huts, what he principally remembered feeling was delight. It had been the 1st of April, and for a moment he had indulged the fancy that he was being played a fool by the men of his company. They had gulled him into believing he must give up his contented army life for that of a citizen, and then had led him, winking behind his back, to another encampment. Alas, the future had lain in the middle ground, the cluster of new brick townhouses, the buildings of war and state, and of course the President's House, Washington's Palace, Hoban's Folly, larger, it was said, than any British governor's mansion of the quondam colonies. A good Republican, Lewis had hated the house on the spot, but now that he had lived in it for 2 years, he must concede inwardly that he was rather fond of it. Why was this? It amused him, for one, that it was not finished, that the imposing exterior yielded on inspection, something the public could perform every day as Mr. Jefferson kept the doors open, a cheerless accretion of half-empty and entirely empty rooms, many of them mere shells. The house was an allegorical monument to the vanity of pomp and royal pretension. Furthermore, Lewis liked his own quarters, two small enclosures framed in lumber and sailcloth, standing at the south end of the cavernous, unplastered east room, where they recalled a tent raised in a grove of barkless trees. Lewis did not always enjoy society, and he had had to endure a good deal of it in his official capacity as the president's private secretary. But the house was so large that, except at dinner, it was possible to feel isolated in it, even when citizens were somewhere off in an unused room, admiring or deploring the appointments or the lack of them. Alone in his canvas cabinet, a painted chair and writing desk the only marks of civilized life, his guns in a corner, a view south down the tussocky slope to the wilds of the Potomac shore, Lewis felt uncrowded, and he valued that extremely. At the other end of the house, Mr. Jay was similarly sequestered in his library. Lewis knew that the president, like him, often wanted to be left alone, a mark of the sympathy that, Lewis flattered himself, had grown up between them. As the president had remarked to him one night as they perused maps on the long library table, the west wind rattling the windows and the servants, as usual, so invisible as to be sprites, they were like two mice in a church. Lewis's habit was to rise at 4:30 and go hunting. One refinement of Philadelphia, to be sure, was the lack of tree stumps in the thoroughfares, a Washington phenomenon that made walking in the dark treacherous. But say what one might about Franklin City, Lewis doubted a man could get up at Front and Chestnut and within an hour bag a pheasant, a deer, or, with luck, a bear. Only the wolves and the Indians were gone from the woods of Washington City. Lewis would bring the meat himself to the presidential kitchen by 7, secured to his back, Indian fashion, by hoppa straps of sinew. He had unhesitatingly accepted Mr. Jay's offer of the position of secretary, out of reverence for the man and a consciousness of his duty, but he had little savored the idea of being an amanuensis. To his surprise, he had discovered that the president had no need of one. Mr. Jay wrote all his own correspondence, copying the letters himself in a press. He kept his own weather diary, correspondence log, account books, and a variety of other vade mecums, such as his garden book, in which he had recorded the date of planting, budding, and fruiting of every tree, shrub, vegetable, grain, and flower on his farm since 1766. It would not be far from the mark to say that, other than his daily ride and twice daily ingestion, Mr. Jay lived at his writing desk. As Lewis, therefore, was not really a secretary, he had spent a number of sleepless nights on his camp bed, by his open window, engaged in the tedious mental round with which he was tediously familiar, namely, asking himself, first, what he was, and second, why Mr. Jay might have chosen him.